From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 27 Sports. You got me. 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. What are we doing today? We're going to preview week nine.
That's right, baby.
How are we at week nine? What happened?
When did that happen?
I don't know.
Sometime between week eight and week 10, I believe.
Yes. Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm.
What's up, everybody? We're live on our YouTube channel. We already got a bunch of comments. I will look at those as soon as I stop talking for a second and be able to put them up on the screen. If you have questions, we can put them there as well. Love to do that. Love to hear from all of you out in simulcast land or semi-simulcast or whatever you want to call it. We are also across all the podcasting platforms. Wherever you can get a podcast, you can listen to the Podcast of Champions. And if you have questions for us, email big10cast@gmail.com, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. And you can tweet us at B1G Podcast. And I mentioned that podcasting, all those podcasting apps. Like, if you got Spotify, go over there, leave us a 5-star rating for the Podcast of Champions. Helps us for sure. Now, if you got an Apple device, you got your iPad, you got your, I don't know, the iPod still exists. They still have those things, but you got your iPhone.
They can't possibly still exist.
They maybe
if not. You own an iPod that's still functional, please email us.
Yeah.
Let us know what went wrong.
Yeah, those don't make a lot of sense.
No.
I mean, like a Walkman still. Sony Walkman, like that's still
be badass.
Did you
say Walkman?
A Sony Walkman. That'd still be badass.
Did you say Walkman?
A Sony Walkman. You know what those are?
Walkman.
You could say Walkman. Yeah, we just put
did
it all
did you
together.
Say Walkman?
Yeah.
Everyone, please sound off in the chat whether you pronounce it Walkman or Walkman.
Well, you could use those with the tape or the CD. They would mm-hmm. skip a little bit. But those would make sense to still have. I don't think you'd need an iPod anymore, because just do it with your phone. You could pretty much do everything with your phone now. But we want you to leave a review over there on the Apple Podcasting app. And if the best ones, what we're going to do is on the recap shows, give you a $17 gift card to Trader Joe's. Now, I got some, hold on, there's some, I don't have the breaking news sound on this one. Got some news. There's going to be some more gift cards available from Trader Joe's. And if I'm not mistaken, it's going to be how many points, the dollar value will be how many points Indiana scores against Washington this week.
Mm.
That could be a significant gift card. So we might get an upgrade. We had 17 points UCLA scoring against LSU. We got Indiana against Washington. Game day is going to be there. We're going to get some more gift cards from Trader Joe's, our buddy John Abrea. So if you're rooting for higher gift card amounts, you want Indiana to score a ton of points.
Ooh.
So that's going to be pretty fun.
Yeah. They could put up, I mean, they've been putting up 40 on pretty much everyone. So why not here? Why not now?
Borbo says Ryan is correct.
Look, I'm not going to take it from a quorum of one, Borbo. All right? I'm not taking it from somebody named Borbo either.
If you said, I think I probably would say Sony Walkman. I bet you back then I said Sony Walkman more. It just sort of comes out quickly. I haven't said that word in many, many decades. So I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be appalled like you were, but you get appalled. Yeah.
Wow.
You just said that.
No. I'm emphasizing your emphasis.
Yeah.
On the wrong syllable.
So we got a lot of people like rooting for Indiana, which is great.
Now we've got Dave from Segoim also saying Ryan is right.
Okay. So
have I been living a lie?
I don't think you're living a lie, but you shouldn't be this upset about it.
I'm not
way.
Upset. I'm perplexed. I'm confused.
My indifference towards how it's pronounced is, I think, endearing to the listeners. So
wow. They're
like, they're agreeing with me as opposed to you going, that is terrible. You should never say like,
when did I say that?
I know you just did. Like the look on your face
honestly,
that I can't
God.
See.
You can't see my face. It's under all this gray hair.
That's true. That is a pleasure. Like you get to look at me. I don't have to look at you, but that's I can so see true. You on the screen.
Yeah. I get to look at your side profile. Terrible Roman nose.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Is it Roman?
I don't know what it is.
It might be. Yeah, I'm like part Italian, so it could be that. So what are we doing today? We're going to preview a bunch of games.
Mm-hmm.
What do we got?
Football games. Lots of them.
So we got extra. We got eight this week?
We have eight games. Only two teams are on byes, and they are two of the worst teams in the league. So it is a relatively stacked slate of good football games.
Yeah. Nice. We got Walkmen. I like that. Yeah. Okay, good stuff. So what we're going to do, is there anything else up at the top we need to talk about?
There's nothing else.
You forget. We have a sponsor.
Who?
It's my bookie.
Wow.
So we're going to make our picks today.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to look at the overall standings, Dave crawled back out of the sewer.
If you want to look at last week's standings, you can do that as well.
He's 500 now, 39, 39, and 1. I am 43, 35, and 1. But Dave did have a good week last week. I had a crap week last week. We're going to do our picks coming up. You choose who you want to believe. You could go against anytime we agree. That's usually a pretty good bet. If you want to go over to MyBookie and put your picks in there, you can do the picks like we do. Pick the games. You want to do the over-unders. It could be a lot of fun. Do a little teasing. If you want to do first half, second half action. Heck, you want to bet this weekend here in Los Angeles. We got a World Series game going on. We got a Laker game going on. We got a Big Ten football game going on, all within like a couple of miles of each other on one freeway. What could go wrong on a Friday evening, David, in Los Angeles with that going on? But you can bet all of those. Any of those things happening, you can bet over at MyBookie. And if you haven't signed up yet, you should go do it. Use the promo code POC for Podcast of Champions. You can even use Pac-12 if you want to. And what they'll do is give you a 100% initial deposit match. So if you put in, say, $250, you want to go and bet some games this weekend, they will match that and put another $250 into your account. So you're a winner right away. And then go with our picks, go against our picks, whatever you want to do. Be a winner over the weekend when you make all your bets, because you can win and bet and have fun over at MyBookie. Could we say you could bet anything, anytime, anywhere? Where, David? Where can you do that?
At MyBookie.
Yes. Perfect.
I thought I contributed a lot to that read.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. But I'm curious what people do, because you were like really, really terrible for a while. And you've last week was a very good week for you. Surged back a little bit, back to 500.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I emerged from a sewer stinking of revolting garbage and excrement. And now I am basking in the sun.
Yeah. Gopher Insight is like very active. Let me pull. I think he has a fun. He has a fun comment here. He's very active in the chat. Thank you for that. We love to see like more traditional Big Ten teams fans in the chat instead of like the former Pac. We love the former Pac-12 ones too. He says, Dave and Ryan, is there a more plucky upstart Big Ten team than USC right now? They have fought hard and have been in every game this season.
It's such a good point, Gopher Insight. It's I think when you think about heart of a champion, obviously not the talent, obviously not the coaching, obviously not like all of the things that are necessary to be a champion, but when you're just talking about heart of a champion, being able to play every team close, whether you're going up against the big boys like Maryland or, you know, teams that are a little bit down like Michigan, still playing close games every single week, really firing out. I think you've got to admire what Lincoln Riley has built there. And what are you still building?
Plucky.
And I think it's just a matter of, I don't know, like 5-7 more years, get a little bit further away from sanctions, get a little bit further down the road, and those 8-4, 9-3 seasons are going to be coming back.
Yeah, that's a good point there.
It's a plucky program.
DBID1 says, I got a serious question. I haven't watched a lot of Rutgers, but I can't. But I remember several weeks back, Dave said, quote, there might be a possibility of a 10-0 Rutgers. I love when people bring up things David says that are very, very, very wrong. I mean, it happens a lot, but just saying.
When did I say 10-0 Rutgers?
What changed to make them significantly worse?
I said 10-0 Indiana. I don't remember saying 10-0
Rutgers. That was more recently.
10-2 Rutgers was the possibility, because I don't think anyone was ever thinking they were going to beat USC at USC. What happened with Rutgers was that Rutgers got hilariously injured. And not hilarious. Hilarious is the wrong word. They got ridiculously injured. Their entire secondary is banged up. They lost a starting linebacker. Their edge rush is gone. They lost their key backup running back. Just a lot of pieces kind of fallen by the wayside. And in addition to that, their defense, we all kind of assumed it was going to be pretty good to start the year, and it ended up being ass. And it's yes. It's getting progressively worse, I think, by the week. I mean, UCLA just huge ass. There you go. UCLA just doubled up their like top score total for the year. They scored 17 points in a game, and they scored 35 against Rutgers and looked great offensively, which should tell you everything you need to know about Rutgers defense.
All right.
I'm not even getting sound through this anymore, like through either side.
Okay, well, tough.
I'm just letting you know.
Just yeah, I don't care. Like you're this all provided for free. If it doesn't work to your liking,
should I just take them off?
No.
Maybe.
Should leave them on.
Just for the look.
Yes. We got one from CJ. There's a lot of letters there. I don't get the USC hate. They failed to close out games, but they're not actually a bad team. Also, what's up with the jabs at M, Dave?
This is where I think I need to calibrate with the Big Ten listeners, because that wasn't a jab at Maryland. Maryland's 4-3. They're fine. Decent team. It was a jab at USC, you know, saying USC can even contend with the big boys in the Big Ten like Maryland. That was a jab at USC. So I'm almost always going to be jabbing at USC. There'll be some like kind of general stuff about other Big Ten teams. But no, like, and this is where maybe it's me failing, where I'm not calibrating correctly with, fitting into the psyches of the Big Ten listeners, but not a jab at Maryland. Maryland's fine. They look like they rebounded. It's great, but they're obviously not Ohio State, and I was joking that, USC.
That sounds like a shot at Maryland. That they're not Ohio State.
You know.
Yes, and no, and we understand that USC, do you know what an FEI is? Like FEI, like stats or whatever? Like USC is like top 20 in the country and that stuff.
No,
and
it's 3-4. They're having... Okay, let's just take off the the kayfabe for a second. Yeah. They're having one of the most hilarious seasons in history because they're actually good. Like they're actually like they're not like that Clay Helton horrible team or something like that. Like they're actually pretty good. So you made fun of me preseason because I was saying, and I was kind of like leaning into it a little bit, but the offense took a step back, not a huge step back. They're still like comfortably a top 20 offense, and the defense improved to about middling, but that combination has resulted in a load of just tough games that they have been on the opposite side of winning. And I think some of it comes down to Lincoln Riley not being a great game manager. Like that's not his skill set. He's an offensive maestro who wants to blow teams out, and he can't do it this year with that offense. And so it's just close game, close game, close game, close game, and they're just on the wrong side of almost every one of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad. Like, what was the thing? I think what was it's like they're like the worst good team. Like they're like a good team, but they're just bad at it. Like they're not very like they shouldn't be 3-4 for sure, but they are.
Totally.
So that's just so new listener. That's just Dave. If any opportunity to take shots, I mean, to be fair, he'll take shots at UCLA too. It's just more of like the teams you know, but it does give him some pleasure if USC's like stumbling over themselves, which they are. Yes, they're way better than their record is, but that's your record is what your record is, so that's what you are.
Yep.
Okay, let's get into previewing the game. Speaking of
West Texas Mike says that's not no top 20 offense. USC in an opponent adjusted FEI, which I still do think carries some preseason weights, but it is a pretty good measure. They're eighth offensively. Like it's not a bad offense. They've played some good defenses.
Yeah, they played a lot of tough teams and stuff, but they're still, yeah, I get it. But, okay. Well, let's preview these first games. We got on Friday night.
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knights.
They're taking on in the Coliseum.
USC Trojans.
All right, this game is taking place at 8 p.m. Pacific, and this will be the one time that I reference the Eastern time, 11 p.m. Eastern. So, Rutgers fans, kickoff. I hope you enjoy.
And it'll probably kick off at like 11:20 Eastern.
Yes, yeah. I lived in Atlanta for a time, and I still covered this. Well, I covered the Pac-12 then. This used to be a Pac-12 show. So I feel your pain staying up late for this, but at least this only has to be once this season. 8 p.m. on Big Fox. Rutgers 4-3, but pretty reeling, I would say, right now. Heading on the road to USC, which is 3-4. And I wouldn't describe USC as reeling, but like, I don't know. Do they feel like a dark cloud is hanging over them or something? I
mean, both teams are on 3-game losing streaks.
Yeah.
So.
But USC, it's like, eh. USC, it's taking place in the Coliseum. USC is a 13.5 point.
Oh, we have 14.5.
Oh, it moved. Should we do the new one or do you want to do the old one? Which end are you taking?
Let's do 14.5 because I'm doing that with my staff already.
Sure, sure. Let's just use the lines that I've got in the doc.
Okay. I was going to put Rutgers, but, you know.
Yeah.
Point, so.
All right. So
I'll take the extra point.
Rutgers, they have the statistical profile of a team that's different from what we saw last week and the week before and the week before that. A huge part of that is that they are very injured. Now, their secondary players, I believe, are slowly probably getting a little bit healthier. They've just been very banged up. They found a little something offensively last week against UCLA. Ethan Calikmanis was able to hit some intermediate throws. And when he had a little bit of time in the pocket, he was able to deliver the ball pretty accurately. USC's pass rush isn't great.
Terrible, actually.
Yeah, we would say it's horrible. Arguably one of the worst in the nation.
It is in the 120th in yes. sack or something. Yeah.
So you can surmise that Calikmanis will also have a little bit of time to throw. And that's important because Kyle Manungai, among many other things, he's also a little banged up. He was questionable last week against UCLA, ended up playing. But he also got dinged up in the game, continued to play. But they're leaning heavily on him. They don't seem super comfortable with the backup, who's a freshman who had to burn his red shirt. So it's going to be riding him to whatever extent they can and then hoping Calikmanis can hit throws. And I kind of think he's going to be able to hit enough to keep this close-ish. It's a weird time. It's a Friday road game late at night, so there's that effect too. Teams rarely are winning those games, and they're, I don't think, very often beating the spread. But I kind of like it as a matchup for Rutgers. I think USC, they're going to win. I feel pretty confident about that, what with it being a 6 days rest on the road Friday night game for Rutgers. But they still have a lot to figure out offensively. There was some speculation this week that Miller Moss would suddenly be benched for Jaden Maiava. Is that his name?
Maiava, yeah.
Yeah. Lincoln Riley put that to bed, or he's lying. Either way, it's probably going to be Miller Moss again. But USC's offense hasn't been great this year. Rutgers' defense is not great right now. I think they'll be able to score, but I have it. USC scoring like 31, Rutgers 21, something like that.
I think I picked that exact score, to be honest, or maybe it was 27-17, something similar. I agree with you on this one. No, both teams had a lot of trouble. USC was on the East Coast, and they're on a short week. Rutgers got to come out. You know, it's 11 p.m. local kickoff for them. That's not an ideal situation there. And like I said, what we call it like Carmageddon here in Los Angeles. So yeah. That night, so game one of the World Series, it's the most expensive like ticket in World Series history, apparently, for the Yankees and the Dodgers. Just down the freeway from Chavez Ravine, you got the Lakers in their second game of the season, I believe. I think it's a 7 p.m. Tip versus the Phoenix Suns. A couple miles up the, you know, Figueroa, then you have the Coliseum, USC and Rutgers on Friday night. Just down the other freeway on 105 on SoFi has a big high school game, like East LA Classic, and there's a concert at the Intuit Dome, and there, which is next to that, and then a concert at the Forum, which is next to that. There's all this crap going on in Los Angeles. It's going to be insane. So if you're going to any of these things, leave way early. This is going to be, it's going to be like a nutty night in Los Angeles, but I think this is going to be a close game. because that's what USC tends to play in. Like you said, they'll probably win. Maybe they win by like 7-10 points, but 14.5 is a lot. 13.5 would be a lot too. But you know, USC's not done a great job covering in these situations. So I'm going to take the points here and Rutgers.
I will say this. If Lincoln Riley breaks tendency and decides he's going to run Woody Marks like 20 plus times and lean on him and Quentin Joyner, and they're going to run combined like 30 times, I think they could win comfortably. I just have no confidence he's going to do that. He hasn't shown that ability to adjust to his running game, and that's the obvious strength of this team this year. So until he does that, I can't predict that he's going to. The matchup would dictate you run the ball at Rutgers.
Yeah.
But they haven't done that this year.
He was asked this week about it, and he said, well, they've been in a lot of two-minute situations. And, you know, Miller Moss shouldn't be thrown at 50 times. Like, there's fans calling for him to be benched.
They're playing nothing but close games. What does he mean they're in a lot of two-minute situations?
I know. It's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So they need to run the ball more. Quentin Joyner is the league leaders of, you know, yards per carry. I think Woody Marks has been great. You got to get those guys.
Does he sometimes just make stuff up because he's defensive? Like, do you think defensive, and so he just seizes the first like thing that he can think of that could help explain it away?
I don't know if it's dismissive, defensive. Like last year when USC's defense was struggling early in the season, and he said, you know, it says to the untrained eye, it was like the defense was bad or something. And then he has to fire his defensive coordinator a few weeks later. Like, he'll say things like that, just sort of like, it's like a dismissive thing, maybe. And then defensive and not realizing like that doesn't make any sense because there was that quote this week,
like if you watch the film, if people who put on the film, they see a really good team and it's just we're not closing out games and I don't know why or something like that. Didn't he say something like that?
I'm sure there's a lot of words were talked.
So many words.
It's like
so many words said.
Just win games. Like don't all this stuff. Okay, let's go to Saturday. So this will bleed over. I don't know if the games will be on at the same time or not, but there's a potential for them to. Like, if this is a long game, they could overlap a little bit. We got first up.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
You know, they were feeling pretty good. Like, hey, man, this could be like a 7-0 team heading into this game. Not the case. They got to bounce back quick because they're taking on
the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is how like screwed on tight are the Nebraska heads after losing by 7 touchdowns last week to Indiana? Because if they're, you know, if they can shake that one off and come ready to play. So anyway, let's get into this. 9 a.m. on Big Fox, Nebraska 5-2. The number two there being a huge loss last week to Indiana where they got blown out. But there's no shame in that.
Was close game? No, not.
Indiana blows out a lot of teams.
Yes.
They're going on the road to take on now number four, Ohio State. They're 5-1. Here's the thing. Ohio State is favored by 25. Is that what I have it in here? 25.5 points.
Yeah.
That's a ton of points for two teams where like, early season, I would have said, it's a 14-17 point game, right?
Yeah.
But Nebraska looked so bad last week against Indiana. It was one of those everything goes wrong games, and you're doing that with a freshman quarterback. And everything went wrong for him in that game. He threw three picks. I think he fumbled one away. He had four total turnovers. So what's his mindset going into this game? Like, where are things mentally for him? And then on the other side, that defense was not put in some good spots by all those turnovers, but it's not like that defense was gangbusters either. Like, they were pretty bad in that game. And yes, you're going against a really good Indiana offense, but guess what Ohio State has? A really good offense. So this is kind of a gut check game for Nebraska, not to win it. I think that's probably an unrealistic expectation, but to play this one close. I think if you want to have confidence going into the back half of the season and feeling like you can not just make a bowl game, but make a decent bowl game, you know, get to 8-4. This is a game where you got to show something.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot roll over and die again like what happened against Indiana. I kind of think they won't. I think, you know, so from a Nebraska perspective, they do have a good defense. I think what we saw against Indiana was anomalous. I think it was a lot of mistakes. And I don't think you're going to count on a quarterback making, you know, four turnovers in a game. Like, that's probably not going to happen again. So when you look at the defense, you say, okay, it's a pretty good rush defense, pretty good pass defense. They're pretty balanced. Ohio State, the one time they've been tested by a decent defense this year was essentially
Oregon,
a decent balanced defense, and Oregon was able to limit them. I won't say limit them completely. I mean, Ohio State still scored in the 30s, but limit them. You know, they weren't scoring 50 on them. I think Nebraska can keep this from being a 50 spot. And then the question becomes, you know, can Raiola, can this offense generate enough to make it a competitive first half and something where they don't get absolutely smoked off the field? I kind of think they can. I mean, I know Ohio State's defense is really, really good. And I don't think Nebraska's going to be scoring. I'd be pretty surprised if they scored 20, but I like them 14-17. I think it's like a 31-14 type game, something like that. So I like Nebraska to cover and look more like the team we saw at the beginning of the season this week than they looked like that against Indiana.
What does Lee Corso say? Not so fast, my friend. But that we're not friends. But still, here I'm going to use simple math for everybody out there.
Mm.
Okay, so Ohio State lost by a point on the road. Get a bye week, right? They got a bye week after that, sort of like lick their wounds. Did they play last week? They didn't play last week, right? Yeah, they had a bye. Lick their wounds a little bit, kind of like figure shit out. They're
more time for the master Chip Kelly to work his magic on this offense.
Yes, you know, 10 men on a PAT, whatever you want to do, all the fun stuff that he likes to do. So I would say this is a team that they're hungry. They're pissed off. They did not like losing that game. And they're going to be motivated. So I think motivation factor for Ohio State, I'm going to go high. Would you agree with that? I think
yeah.
It's probably high. Okay. If I look at what happened last week, I'm going to keep this simple. Indiana won by 7 touchdowns.
Correct.
I think Ohio State is within 3 touchdowns of Indiana. So to say that they could at least win by 4 – I'm going to say yes. So give me Ohio State. Does that make sense?
I love it. I love it. I can't fault your logic. I'll just say Nebraska isn't – like I would say they're roughly in the Iowa range. And Iowa played – they rolled over and died offensively, but they played this Ohio State offense tough defensively for – I would say about a half when they came to Columbus. So, and that was a 28-point win. So, yeah, I mean, could I see Nebraska getting blown out? Yeah, but I think it requires them rolling over and dying again. I just think they're too well coached to do that. I think they're going to be I think they'll be a little bit better than that.
Keep it close. All right.
Keep it close-ish.
Like close-ish.
Lose by a couple of scores, but not, you know, 4.
Yeah, okay. Not get absolutely their doors blown off again.
Yep.
Which would be very demoralizing. You can't, like, with a freshman quarterback, and in the chat, Dustin, he said that Raiola's dinged up too.
Yep.
So we'll see what happens there. Okay. Next up, this is also in that same window. So you might have a little overlap too. Rutgers, USC might be finishing at this point. We've got
Washington Huskies.
They're going to be traveling to
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
9 a.m.
Hold on.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
Got to play that.
This is taking place at 9 a.m. on the Big Ten Network. Washington, which is 4-3, should be probably 6-1, but Jed Fish is stupid. They're going on the road to take on number 13, Indiana. Indiana 7-0. Indiana is currently favored by, what did I have it in the doc?
6.5.
6.5 points.
Is that right?
Yes. So
should I just write you down for Indiana right now? Or is that like,
what's that?
I should write you down for Indiana right now.
Curtis Rourke is out for this game.
Okay.
The starting quarterback for Indiana. So it's going to be Taven Jackson.
So?
Taven Jackson looked good last week for Indiana in the second half of their blowout win.
They threw like 3 touchdowns or something. Like.
Yeah, but how much you can take from that second half is the question, right?
Because gotcha.
Nebraska was already getting blown out pretty hard at that
yes.
point. Last year for Indiana, he was not good. He played in six games, completed over 60% of his passes, but five picks to two touchdowns.
You know what the difference is from last year to this year?
Yeah. Play it.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
So Taven Jackson, he gives them a little bit more, at least judging by one game, he gives them a little bit more as a runner than Curtis Rourke did. He had six carries for 36 yards and a touchdown. But still, this offense is going to be predicated on delivering the ball downfield. Washington's defense is pretty decent.
Yeah.
This is not a bad defense. They're bad against the run, or mediocre against the run, I would say. But they're pretty good pass defense. And the strength of Indiana so far has been the pass offense. So that's going to be strength on strength. I think it's going to be a really, really interesting matchup. Washington's offense, I think, is going to have a tough time. Indiana is once again kind of in that they're balanced and good. They're balanced and good against the run. They're balanced and good against the pass. It's hard to eke out an advantage. I'm still going to take Indiana because I can't pick against the killer Cignetti because
like,
he's just...
You're like questioning this?
No, but the thing is you don't really know what you're getting with Taven Jackson. Like Curtis Rourke, you could have even projected going into this year, he's a year removed from ACL, and if you look 2 years against 2 years ago at Ohio, he was awesome. So you could project that he'd be pretty good. But Taven Jackson has no real body of work. So you don't know. You got to kind of guess. But I'm going to go with, you know, play it.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
I saw you wanting to. I mean, this is the best offense in the country right now. And it's obviously a huge part of it is Curtis Rourke, but I don't think it's wholly dependent on him. So, you know, Washington's still an analytics darling. Still the analytics system have this 4-3 team as like a top 30 to 35 team. But I think it's just going to be too much for him. I think Indiana will cover the 6.5.
Yeah. Game day is going to be there, too. There's going to be a lot of hype, hoopla, circumstance, all that stuff. I feel like this is a team. I mean, they made some good moves in the portal in the offseason. They obviously made a great head coaching hire. To be only favored by a touchdown. I mean, this would be, I think for Indiana to only like to not cover, they're losing this game. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think this is a field goal kind of game or something.
No.
If something goes wrong and they're just not, whatever.
If they're not covering, it's because Taven Jackson is, he's not able to run the offense. And if that happens, then you're going to run into, a Washington defense that is pretty good, and they could shut them down if Taven Jackson isn't ready to play. If he's not, you know, it's one thing to come in, you know, middle of a game and you're already blowing a team out, but to start a game and try to put together some successful drives against a defense that isn't cheating one way or the other yet, that's more challenging. So I think we're going to know a lot after the first quarter of that game.
Yeah. Okay, those are the morning games, and we got a few in this 12:30 afternoon window. Let's start with our ranked on ranked matchup. We've got
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
They're number 20, and they're going to Eugene, Oregon to take on the number one.
Oregon Ducks.
12:30 p.m. on CBS, number 20, Illinois, at number 1, Oregon. Oregon is a 21.5 point favorite. That is a ton of points. So Oregon's Illinois' offense at this point is best when it throws. Altmaier's been a quality quarterback this year. Last week against Michigan, I think he threw for like 80 total yards. That's kind of a weird one-off. I think that game was just Michigan's got a good defense, and they're going to put you into some uncomfortable situations. But they didn't make any critical mistakes, Illinois. This is a different kind of defense. I don't like Oregon's a very good defense, but it's not going to just completely wipe out your ability to throw the ball. I think Altmaier is going to be able to hit some throws downfield to Bryant. They're a really good receiver. And create some scoring drives. I don't think it's going to be a ton, but I think they'll be able to create some. They don't have a great running offense, and Oregon's got a pretty good... I mean, they're pretty good defensively on against both. But I think they'll be able to score a little bit if they emphasize the pass. On the other side, though, I just don't really see how Illinois stops Oregon's running game. Oregon's got a really efficient running attack, and Illinois' run defense has, I would say, since the beginning of the year, has gotten kind of worse from where it was at the beginning of the year. They're good against the pass, but I could see Oregon just, you know, this is kind of the game plan they've got. I mean, this is a perfect kind of game for them because it's all run the ball, dink and dunk, yeah. Run the ball, dink and dunk. And I think they'll be able to move it pretty consistently on Illinois. 21 and a half, though.
It's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. I mean, if you look at what Illinois has done this year, when they went on the road to Nebraska, they won. When they went on the road to Penn State, they lost by 14. They're not really, I mean, they're not getting blown by anybody. I'm going to take Illinois, even though statistically I could see Oregon covering, yeah. But just maybe because of the half point, I'll take Illinois.
I'm with you there, too. I think it's one of those things where we saw last week Purdue that showed a lot of life, rolled over and died, and Oregon just sort of like, you know, rolled out 35-0 on them. And it just was kind of a weird sort of feeling. But I feel like Illinois is going to come in there, and I think they're going to have some offensive success. But Oregon will probably have a couple of, you know, one play, like 75-yard run drives where, like, you know, there's things kind of go their way and they can run the football. They don't need to, like, push the pace. They won't need to. They're sort of like can kind of strangle, you know, strangle this Illini team and keep it like 17 points and you just sort of keep it there. And you're just like, oh, okay. But I feel like Illinois has a little bit of life, and they will, even if it's like going poorly like that, they'll be able to come back and score, you know, and maybe it's 24 points and it goes to 17 and it kind of goes back and forth a little bit. I just like them to keep it under that, but I still feel Oregon wins like comfortably by like double digits, like a 17 point kind of win or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows? But we've seen this Oregon team sort of play with its food and not blow teams out and cover big spreads. And then other times, like last week against Purdue, it didn't even look like they were trying to cover. Plus, I don't think he's been convicted yet, but Dylan, you know, Dylan Gabriel, obviously, you know, the point shaving scandal that you brought up.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is a competitive enough game that, you know, maybe he does. Yes. Maybe he does throw a pick when he's going into the end zone up 18, right?
Yeah.
Right?
I know.
I'm just saying.
You may have misspoke, or maybe you didn't. I'm not sure. Destiny, blown out, Dave, not blown. We don't know if Illinois is getting blown.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Words are tough.
Words are hard.
Especially when
there's so many of them.
We say a lot, too. Like,
there are
all in
so
a row.
Many words.
All in a row.
Yeah.
They have to mean something.
And they have to, yeah. Assigning meaning to this connection of words.
Try to make them funny, make people laugh.
You hard to do.
There's a lot of weird shit going on here. Okay. Let's go. Another game we've got in that window.
Northwestern Wildcats.
And they're on the road taking on
Iowa Hawkeyes.
12:30 p.m. on the Big Ten Network. Northwestern traveling to Iowa. Iowa is currently a 14-point favorite. I continue to not understand Northwestern. Like,
how could you?
I don't understand how they win games, why they win games, like what deals they have made such that they can occasionally win a game. Because if you look at their statistical profile, they're 129th in offensive success rate and 99th in defensive success rate.
So they're top 100 in one of them. That's good.
They're 3-4. How the three? How? And one of those three was a absolute blowout of Maryland on the road.
On the road.
By 27 points.
Yeah.
But how? And it's always like if you delve into a Northwestern game, like how they win a game, it's like always just some nonsense happened. Like, oh, there was a punt return for a touchdown, or the other team blocked a kick, but somehow Northwestern recovered and then ran it in for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Like, it just something nonsensical
happened.
Stuff
you could count on every week.
Correct. Yeah. Iowa's not that different. Iowa, you know, they
win. They're more buttoned up.
Yeah.
More fundamentally sound.
So Iowa, Northwestern's defense, the one decent aspect of it this year has been the rush defense. Not great, but decent. Iowa's one decent part of the offense has been its rush offense. This game, I think, comes down to, can Caleb Johnson run for over 5 yards per carry against a defense that's going to be geared entirely to stopping him and that's actually good against the run? Mm-hmm. The other side of things, like, I don't know. Like, Northwestern could, throw seven picks. Like, they could, you know, turn it over a bunch of times. I think it's just going to be a punt fest. Like, I think what they'll do is they'll go three and out a bunch, and then it's just going to be highly dependent on their defense stopping that rushing attack. I just don't think that lasts. So I'm going to take Iowa minus 14.
Wow, but I thought you were going.
I think it could be like, I don't know, 17-0, like 21-3, like just something, you know, 20-3.
We've seen Iowa put up some points. Like last year, you would never like lay 14 against a team that just had a blowout win like 2 weeks ago. Like you wouldn't have done that. But Iowa, we've seen them, if they get the run game going, and like you said, Northwestern, if they do something well, maybe stop the run a little bit, but they've actually put up some decent points in these situations. So yeah. I think they're pretty pissed off that they had that poor showing at Michigan State last weekend. And I think they come out and play well. I mean, Northwestern didn't do much last week, right? Wisconsin came in there and just sort of like shut them down.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking it was like that Maryland win was sort of like a blip where you just sort of like the stars aligned and you're trying to figure everything out. Iowa at home, like if this was on the road, maybe. And I know they played well at Maryland, but that's not the same kind of home environment that this is. So, yeah, I'm going to take Iowa too, minus 14. Feels really weird having when you weren't sure if they'd score 14 before, but they might even get up in the third. They might get like a 31-pointer in this one.
And, look at you.
I feel pretty good about Iowa and covering the spread.
Got it.
If that makes you feel better. I thought you were going to take the points for sure.
No way, homie.
All right. Next up, we've got
Maryland Terrapins.
On the road, taking on
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
All right. This could be a really good game. 12:30 p.m. on FS1. Maryland fresh off the 29-28 win over USC. Is that what it was? 29-28?
29-28, yes.
Yeah. Going on the road to Minnesota, which had a bye last week, I believe, after beating UCLA on the road, 21-17. Minnesota is a 4-point favorite. This is a really interesting game. I would say these are two very evenly matched teams. I think Maryland's offense, pretty solid. You know, it's not great, middling, but pretty solid rushing and throwing. Like they don't have a huge weakness. They don't have a great strength. And Minnesota's defense, pretty middling. Not great against the run, a little bit better against the pass, but not great. Maryland could score. On the other side, Minnesota's got, from an efficiency angle, because I got a lot of Minnesota fans who hated me on this, but from an efficiency angle, it's a good rushing offense. It's not explosive. They're not averaging like, you know, 6 yards per carry or anything, but grinding the chains, converting fourth and third downs, short yardage, they're good. Maryland, pretty middling defensively too. It's not a great rushing defense, not a great passing defense, kind of iffy on both. I would say something that gets lost in the stats is that Brosmer is a big upgrade over Cali McManus from last year at quarterback. But this feels like a really, really even game, and it feels like one extra point than I would like to have attributed to a team. So I'm going to take those points and take Maryland on the road, riding a little bit of a high. But I could see this one going either way. I just think it's more like a 3-point game than a 4-point game.
I've gone back and forth a little bit, but having seen both these teams beat the team that I cover, USC, both, everyone was inexplicably, how could that possibly happen? It did. Neither of them had a Big Ten win, all that stuff going in there. But I think Minnesota was more impressive to me than Maryland. Maryland looked like more of a bad team than Minnesota was, just from what I saw happen. I think the circumstances at the end of the Maryland game were sort of like just absolutely crazy. Like, score the late touchdown, go for two. It worked. I mean, just like everything sort of worked. Where I felt like Minnesota was like, yeah, they probably should have won, but it was like, I thought they played a better game overall. It's at home. It's at four's a bunch. But I kind of feel a little more confident in what I saw from Minnesota than Maryland. So I'm going to take Minnesota in this one and lay the 4 points.
Yeah.
All right. This is a good logo game. We got next up. This is a little later on.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. And they're on the road taking on
Wisconsin Badgers.
Yeah, this is, I think, going to be a really, really interesting and fun game. 4:30 on NBC. Number three, Penn State, undefeated still, going on the road to take on Wisconsin, which has been surging of late. They're 5-2. Penn State is a 6.5-point road favorite. But here's what Wisconsin has done in the last, let's even go last 4 weeks, because they were leading 21-10 at halftime at USC in the first game of Braden Locke starting over Van Dyke. Fell apart in the second half. No, you know, that absolutely happened, but they showed a little bit of life there. Then they smoked Purdue at home, and okay, it's Purdue. They smoked Rutgers on the road 42-7, and then they beat the absolute hell at Northwestern 23-3, and just stifled them. In each game, they've been running the ball really, really effectively. This rushing attack has coalesced into a, I would say, a decided strength for Wisconsin. They put up a crazy number of yards on Rutgers. I think it was like over 300. Almost single-handedly tanked Rutgers' rushing defense statistically. But offensively, just generally, this team has improved significantly from where it was at the very beginning of the season. They're pretty efficient running the ball, and they're getting towards middling efficiency passing the ball, and that was not the case at the beginning of the year. Defensively, not a great rush defense, pretty good against the pass. Now, Penn State, it's really just solid across the board. Like, you're looking at, if you look at kind of any success rate metrics, they're pretty much top 15 in pretty much everything. The one maybe slight weak point is defensive success rate against the pass. But for the most part, they're doing a good job preventing efficiency on defense, and they're pretty damned efficient on offense. Wisconsin, though, is it's one of those things where they're surging of late, and Penn State's just kind of even. You know, Penn State's just kind of playing the same game. They had that tough one on the road at USC where they could have lost, didn't. I've watched them now pretty closely in several games, like very closely in several games. I've watched pretty much every game of theirs, but watched UCLA extensively, watched USC extensively, watched West Virginia extensively. They don't really have, and this has kind of been the weak point all year, is they don't really have a number one receiver. They've got Tyler Warren, and he's hard to cover.
Yes. I've seen that.
But Wisconsin's got a pretty good pass defense. Are they going to, you know, figure out the key to covering him? And if they do, is Drew Aller going to be able to complete consistent throws to this receiving core that doesn't have a true number one guy, and no number one guy has stepped up? I like Wisconsin here. I think they cover, and I wouldn't be surprised if they won. I picked it preseason, and it looked ridiculous for a couple of weeks, but Wisconsin's come on, so why should I doubt myself in August? Never doubt yourself in August.
Why? What? Yeah. Why would you do that?
So I'll take Wisconsin. I think they have a chance at an upset here.
That's the way I'm leaning. But we have a great listener in the chat, Matthew, who's a Wisconsin fan. I want to hear what he says. So Matthew, should I pick Wisconsin? That's where I'm leaning. So this will probably be a little delay, but put in the chat what you think. But I think I'm going with Wisconsin. I do. It's a lot bunch of points. I kind of feel Penn State's going to win, but it might be like kick a field goal at the end kind of thing, not by like almost a touchdown.
They've been doing that a lot, and I don't think James Franklin's a great game manager. Like, I don't think it's going to be like maximizing all of their advantages with like, and I don't think he's horrible. I don't think he's like the worst ever, but he's not great. So I think it's, you know, there could be some stuff that keeps this one close. And Wisconsin's found something. Like yes, they've played three bad teams in a row or three, but you whatever gotta, you want to call them in
better.
A row, but they're blowing them all out. It's the same theory, not quite the same team, but it's the same theory as, you know, Indiana. Have they really played, you know, too many good teams before Nebraska? No, not really. But they're smoking them all.
Yeah.
Like
that
and,
matters.
And so when you start to smoke bad teams, that's meaningful.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin's doing that right now.
Okay, so Matthew says pick the Badgers. He said like me, he said, I think we cover but lose close. So so I'm going with Matthew on this one, and I will take Wisconsin, the Badgers.
The Badgers.
And yeah, we're both going with there. Okay, we got one last one in this window. Do they have a name for this one? We had a lot of good names in the Pac-12, but yeah, I don't know if
can you sound off with whatever the name is for this one?
Here we go.
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
At
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Wow. Scratch, 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 scratch.
Wow. 4:30 p.m. on the Big Ten Network. So this is opposite Penn State, Wisconsin, but I'd keep an eye on this one. It's important for both of these teams because Michigan State, 4-3 on the road. This game is an important part of any bowl picture for Michigan State. And for Michigan, 4-3 at home, this is a pretty significant part of any bowl picture for Michigan. Like, this is a key game for both teams. Michigan is currently favored by 5. Do we want to go with that one?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, let's go with that one because I want that extra 1.5. So here's the deal. Michigan State last week was able to shut down Iowa's rushing attack for the most part. Caleb Johnson got free for one big run, but otherwise stifled. What's Michigan's strength as a team this year?
They're air raiding, throw it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
toss it all over the field. Yeah, it's just deep bomb
after
deep bomb.
Yards per completion through the
roof. No, it's entirely a rushing attack. Jack Tuttle has been brought in as the quarterback, but he is still not anything like what they've had at quarterback in the past. They're not going to rely on him making a bunch of throws downfield. Michigan State's got a good run defense. Michigan's got a good run offense. That's the story of this game. Can Michigan grind out drives on the ground against a very good rush defense? Because that's what Michigan State has. The other story, and this is the one that I think is truly unpredictable, is Aiden Chiles, the slot machine of turnovers. Like, will it be paying out in this game or not? Like, will he make absolutely absurd decisions into coverage? Will he just have like weird empty hand fumbles? Like, will that stuff happen or not? And if it happens, they're going to get blown out.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't happen, then there's every reason to think they could do to Michigan what Illinois did to them last week, what they did to Iowa last week, what Michigan State did to Iowa last week. But you just never know with Aiden Chiles. I think right now, I like what Jonathan Smith is building there. I'm going to take Michigan State to cover just because it's 5 points. But Aiden Chiles could walk in there and throw 3 interceptions.
Yeah.
Then it's game over.
Yeah. I'm with you with this, Michigan State and the points. I think Jonathan Smith is good in these kind of games. If you have a team that's one dimensional, I think he comes up with good game plans. The fact that Michigan State just played Iowa, similar styles, you know, as far as like, you know, they would rather punt and run the ball and play good defense, and they handled that.
Yep.
But Michigan can be, you know, they can get after you, and I think they could force Chiles into some bad decisions and some horrible mistakes. And if that happens, Michigan just sort of wins this one without looking, you know, but with Tuttle throwing for 87 yards and a pick, you know, something like that. They still win the game. But if they don't, then I feel like this is going to be, they're just not going to be able to move the ball enough, and Michigan State's going to be good enough that they can score some points. And, you know, Chiles will make a couple good plays. You just can't have them make the 2 really great plays and then 4 like horrific ones. But I like Jonathan Smith going against a team that's one-dimensional, so I'm going to take the points here too.
Yeah. I will say Iowa's defense is not the defense it had last year.
Fair.
And so Michigan State scoring 32 in that game, and I know a lot of it was field goals. I don't see them doing that against Michigan. Like, I think if this is a game where they're covering, it's got to be something that's played in the maybe sub 20 range.
Yeah.
Like something where it's like 17-14, that sort of deal.
Matthew says Paul Bunyan Trophy.
All right. I think I knew that one.
I thought it would be some auto industry thing or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Maybe not. Okay. Well, that is all of our games. I got to play this one more time.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
We have the longer one.
He was given an offer he couldn't refuse. He knows the score. He gets the women. And he kills the bad guys. Signetti. Signetti kills.
And what was this one?
God has mercy.
Signetti.
Don't.
Yeah, Signetti kills.
I think the first one is still like... Yeah. I think that's the one that
it's
works.
It's got a great rhythm to
the
it.
The tempo is awesome, yeah. And that's what we should do. Okay, so let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, do some questions, and any other rants that David has, we'll get into. Back in a minute, everyone. All righty. We're back.
All right.
On the Podcast of Champions.
Where do we begin?
We have a long voicemail.
From?
My friends at the FBI said we're supposed to just call him the Rutgers fan. Is that okay?
That's fine.
I know we called him other things before.
What's his sign?
Is he a Scorpio? There's a lot of Scorpios.
There are. I'm a Scorpio.
Are you a Scorpio? Oh, yeah. When's your birthday?
November 19th.
Ah, nice. Yeah. I saw some Instagram post about people like not wanting to date Scorpios. Like Scorpios are bad. Are Scorpios bad news? Is that the thing?
I don't know, man.
I wonder if our Rutgers fan is a Scorpio. But anyway, let's play his voicemail. It must cut off because it goes right to 3 minutes, which is like our limit. Here we go.
Hello, Ryan. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. That's right. It's me. The resident Rutgers fan. Well, well, well. Finally, enjoying listening to you two both reinfuse some of that sardonic, snarky wisdom that made the Podcast of Champions originally worth listening to. It was so disgusting listening to you suck up to the Big Ten for so long. I'm so glad you're back. Welcome back. Also, really appreciate, big shout out, appreciate the total lack of empathy for teams struggling with the rash of injuries. Casually dismissing Stanford as they suck and putting them last in the former Pac-12 rankings. I love it. Lacks total empathy. Who cares that their whole secondary is down? Who cares they lost their center and they're starting true freshmen in the offensive line in the secondary and are paying the price for it? Who cares that they can't get transfers in from all over the country to provide some depth in the war of attrition? Ha ha ha. No empathy. They suck. I love it. Listening to Dave even acknowledge that Rutgers has a rash of injuries was putrid. Come on, Dave, where's that cold-hearted journalism? They suck. Rutgers sucks. Stanford sucks. I love it. Bring on the pain. I can't wait to channel it into some of my other hobbies. I guess I had a question for you. I would love to... Let's talk about pass interference, shall we? If there's one change I've noticed gradually... It's like a frog. You put it in cold water. You put a frog in hot water, he jumps right out. Put a frog in cold water and gradually increase the temperature, they'll boil to death. They don't even notice the gradual change. Same thing with pass interference calls. Remember when you used to not be able to face guard? Remember when you used to not be able to reach across and grab the receiver's arm? Remember when you couldn't hold the jersey? It seems like, am I the only one? It seems like pass interference doesn't get called unless your body, your mass accelerates through the offensive player. Force equals mass times acceleration. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, you old nerd. Yeah, I think that's science. So if the body goes through at a high speed and causes the receiver to go off their spot, yes, you'll get a pass interference call. But other than that, it seems like Brazilian hand fighting out there. You can grab the arm, the jersey, you can play slap and tickle, you can grab their pickle. You can do whatever you want. Face guard, right guard, left guard. You can do anything you want and disrupt the receiver, and it doesn't get called. I think the teams that have innovative passing attacks, a.k.a. a Lincoln Riley team, I think they're suffering. You look at the numbers, I'm noticing these teams that used to throw the ball around the yard, those numbers are down. And Stanford's receivers are definitely getting manhandled in all these against good secondaries.
All right, that's our 3 minutes.
Wow.
That is something we've noticed, though, that there's not as much. It's almost like this was a conference like built on running. So like you can do crap in the passing game. They don't care. But, you know, do you see that? It seems like there's not as many pass interference calls.
I mean, I'm not noticing that.
Really?
In the Big Ten?
Yes.
No, I'm not noticing that. I'm seeing a lot of pass interference committed by UCLA's defenders.
But not getting called.
No, but getting called.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
For sure. So I'm not seeing that as much. I will say the Zodiac Killer, the resident Rutgers fan being a little calmer this week was good.
Yes.
I will say last week was definitely in the depressive phase. This was more of the mania phase, and we know what that leads to. So can we get that address? We got to send you that Trader Joe's gift card.
Yeah, we got some. And you root for Indiana. It could be an even bigger gift card.
Yeah, and we'll just let some friends of ours know about that, too, so they can send you some cool stuff, too.
Destiny's in the chat saying, check the voicemail. I'm looking at, if you're calling our voicemail number, 424-532-0678, I'm not seeing a new voicemail come in. Maybe it takes a little bit, but I'll keep checking.
Or maybe. Maybe that's what we just listened to.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's our Rutgers fan.
I'm just saying.
It would make sense.
All right. Next up, we've got, is the next one questions for the boys?
Yes, it is.
All right. This is from our friend, Hugh Janus. Hey, guys. It's your buddy, Hugh Janus, back again with a few quick questions. I know you appreciate brevity, so here we go. One, I asked this a few weeks ago and wanted to ask again now that we've seen more from Suck and UCLA. Mm. I think he misspelled USC.
They're close to
They're so close. Yeah. Which coach has gone from their school first, Lincoln, Riley, or Deshaun Foster? There are about 80 million reasons why it's Deshaun Foster.
Yes. And those are dollars.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Two, which is the bigger accomplishment? Solo climbing Mount Everest with no oxygen or putting a man on the moon?
Ooh. Did you ever read Into Thin Air?
I didn't.
Krakauer, I think it was. It was a long time ago. I was very fascinated with, and I've climbed local mountains like it. I've never done like one of those where you like need oxygen and things, but like the fact that people die, I kind of got into, I'm like, that's pretty cool. But now that you see, like, there's so many, I mean, it's not that there's so many people are dying. If you want to go out and do that and you die, like, whatever, that's fine. Like, you're doing this adventure, but there's so much trash up there, like above base camp, because people just discard their oxygen cans. It's sad. Like, if I went up there, it would be to like sort of clean up or, you know, try to do like a little cleanup or something. So I'm down on the whole Mount Everest thing now, just because it's like,
yeah,
it's become like a boutique-y thing to do, and people pay like guys a shit ton of money to get them to the top.
The answer to this question is strapping three guys to a rocket and shooting them to a like object that's, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles away from the Earth.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
I would definitely agree with that.
Like, random people in furs could climb up to the top of Everest. Like, yeah, it requires oxygen. It's also like, you know, if you're built different, you can get to the top of it too. But like, it took, I don't know, hundreds of years of innovation plus like the concerted might of the entire American and Soviet governments to like build a space race that eventually resulted in this. And it's like, even conceiving of the like pure like figuring out of like doing a multi-stage rocket, let alone shooting it even in like the general direction of the moon, but like just, oh yeah, we gotta displace this mass. Like, we've got to drop mass to have more, like, whatever. Who knows?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even understand how planes work, and you're trying to tell me about multi-stage rockets? Get out of here.
Reentry, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
Apollo 13 is good. Like, if back in the day, if you saw that one.
Yeah, like figuring out, yeah, if you don't come in at the right angle into the atmosphere, you're going to skip off into oblivion. And it's like,
or
did you test that? Who knows? You're just telling me you did that with science? You just figured that out with physics? Get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's obviously landing on the moon. Three, which Disney princess would make the best wife for Nick Saban, Chip Kelly, and Deion Sanders? Ooh.
So like the same wife or like there were three different wives?
Well, I think it's three different wives, right?
Okay. I don't know. He's put and.
Okay. Nick Saban.
I don't know enough Disney princess stuff, but especially right, we're well, out of, I'm out of.
Okay. So Nick Saban, You know, he strikes me as a quiet type who likes to be at home and read a good book by the fire. So we got to go Bell for Nick Saban.
Chill.
Chip Kelly. He is, if you just strip away all the football stuff, he is the most Irish looking man in the entire world. And Scotland is close to Ireland. So we're going to go Merida.
Oh, I was thinking
from Brave.
From Brave. Okay. That's fair.
I mean, we got to age her up. Like, I mean, we got to age all of them up because they're like all 15.
I was going to say, like, they're all like 15 years old and these guys are.
Deion Sanders. You need somebody who's going to steal some attention from him. You need somebody who's going to.
That's tough.
Who's going to bring a little bit of fire to it all. That's a tough one.
What about the one from the Frozen one?
Elsa?
One of them?
Elsa in an ice castle?
Nah.
What is Colorado but an ice castle?
It's true. There you go.
All right. Elsa it is.
Okay.
Boom.
I contributed.
4. What was the single most important factor that led to the fall of the Roman Empire?
Hubris.
Yeah, a little bit. Failures of leadership, huge part of it. Doing semi-hereditary emperors, you're generally going to end up with some duds eventually, and they did, a lot of them. Overextension, it was simply too big to continue operating the way it was. Christianity played a role. Competing religions. But I would just say, generally just the decay of a sizable, long-lasting thing. These things don't last forever. And there's lots of different things to point to. But, I think failure of leadership is a huge kind of undersung part. And it wasn't just at the emperor level. It was, at the Senate level, at the municipal level. Like, it was just corruption, decadence, decay, done.
Real quick, Dustin, he says about the Mount Everest thing. This is a Eurocentric question. Tibetans and Nepalese have been climbing these mountains without oxygen for centuries.
That's what I was saying. Some people in furs don't need oxygen because they're built different.
Yeah.
Like going back hundreds of years. Like it just if you are born and raised at like 10,000 feet elevation,
yeah.
Like what's it going up another 15,000?
It's not that big of a deal. Like for Kenyans running marathons, like they've been running marathons in Kenya for millions of years. It's part of the history there, right? Is that why they're good?
Well, and no, also, no. I mean, but Kenya's also at elevation. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was just kidding.
Oh, yes, you were being funny.
That wasn't a very good one, but yes. But no, like, yeah. If you grew up in Denver, like. You're better off as far as running goes than if you were born at sea level.
Yeah.
Just
because you're built different.
I don't know about built, but
it's all about built different. Okay. All right. These have been good. Next one. 5. You're marooned on a desert island and only have one CD of music you can bring. Who's the artist and which CD is it?
I'm terrible with CDs and like
albums.
Yeah. Like I don't like have like, oh, I just listen to this album. I just like listen to random stuff or like. I'd much rather have like a playlist. Like I like Spotify because it's like, oh, it's a playlist of stuff. Mm-hmm. I found like the One Hit Wonder playlist on Spotify. It's really freaking good. A lot of 80s stuff. My theory on why are 80s One Hit Wonders like the best? Because I think it was like their videos. Like you could make a video and it would be like, this was you put all in on this video and it was like a great song, great video, but you never could do anything else.
Do you want to know why they were the best?
Why?
Because you were between the ages of like 11 and what, 20?
Yeah,
21 when you listen to all of that.
True.
Like, that's why. The 80s sucked. Like, the music sucks. But I wasn't in the impressionable age where things are, imprinting on me for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, probably your favorite comedy is from 1985 or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so like from that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's see. What CD? I don't know. Do you have one?
So, here's the thing. Right now, no, because my brain is a melted hunk of just listening to nothing but Taylor Swift constantly, perpetually, always. So it's just like, which Taylor Swift album would I take with me to a desert island? And for the longest time, I would have said 1989, of course. It's got the most bangers, it's got a lot of pop hits. But now, in the fullness of time, after I've, been Stockholm syndromed by my children, I'm leaning towards Lover. Lover's pretty good. But like honestly, even the Whisper songs that I've maligned in the past, like the ones that I hated when my kids first started listening to Taylor Swift, I'm now getting imprisoned by those as well. So you could talk me into Evermore. You could talk me into Folklore. Nobody knows what I'm talking about, and it doesn't matter.
I don't either. I would probably do like a Beatles album. Like if you could do like a greatest hits one, that'd be great. But I would do like Abbey Road or something like that.
Ooh. Billy Joel. I would do Garth Brooks Double Live. That's some shit right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. And then six, Dave, what costumes will your children wear for Halloween this year? Bye for now. Hugh Janus. My youngest is going to be an angel. She usually goes high concept, but this year she decided no. And my eldest, who is still a Disney aficionado, will be Ariel.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right. We got Ryan and Boise. Survivor Pool Final 3. Hey, Ryan and Dave. Just to let you know, Griffin in their Survivor Pool is in fact 11 years old. He's my son, and we often listen to the podcast together in the car. Griffin made it to the final 20 in the pool last year and has beaten me both times we participated. He loves sports and actually has a notebook filled with plays he has diagrammed for his flag football teams. I have a 2 F-bomb limit when we listen to the pod together. Dave seems to be the biggest culprit, but lately Ryan has hit the F-bomb limit when discussing Kyle Whittingham, the media, and Cam Rising's availability. I'm not asking either of you to limit your language, but just know that somewhere in Idaho, the podcast might be turning off when F-bombs start flying. Thanks, Ryan and Boise. He says, P.S., but seriously, I'm not asking you guys to watch your language. Griffin has already heard many F-bombs this year from me while watching USC.
See, this is the kind of email criticizing language usage that I like.
Yes.
Because it is expressing the personal preference, but not indicating that we need to change our ways. Hmm. But saying, hey, you know, if you do this, you might have people switching off the show.
And you would, and I think knowing you, less likely to drop an F-bomb the rest of the show, just keeping that
in. Correct.
But if someone said, I hate it when you swear and it's bad for the environment or something, then you would drop a bunch of F-bombs just to prove a point.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. It's contrarianism to anything I perceive as like, just like smarmy, you know, that sort of stuff. But this, yes. A reasonable request? Phew.
You're in.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah.
All right. This is from Thomas. Chip off the old block. Hey, guys. You will have to forgive me, but I have fallen behind keeping up with the podcast since Ryan returned from Hong Kong.
Oh.
Rather than attempt to catch up before listening to current episodes, I decided to start fresh. The drawback to this ingenious strategy, however, is that I have no idea if you were already asked the question I'm about to pose, so bear with me. Why is UCLA's running game so bad? Don't get me wrong, I like to make trolling tweets about Eric Bieniemy holding a playbook the size of a CIA dossier as much as the next Bruin, but that's not what I'm talking about. What I want to know is what facets of the running game have stopped working since the Chip guy got hired by an old-school Big Ten program. So far, the most I can glean through Google searches is something about UCLA's offense starting to use a fullback again. Well, that and Carson Steele having gone pro. Any insight either of you have would be greatly appreciated, of course, but I know you guys have a lot on your plates making travel arrangements. No doubt Ryan is eagerly awaiting for the Boeing strike to end so that he can do their factory tour in Everett, while awaiting Lincoln Riley to fly the Trojans in to play UW on a Friday night red-eye from Ontario. But even that can't hold a candle to Dave being able to visit Papillon High School, traveling between Omaha and Lincoln in Nebraska. You know, the setting for one of UCLA's own Alexander Payne's most underrated movies, Election, to say nothing of the fact that the Bruins play the Cornhuskers, wait for it, the weekend before Election Day. Ooh. Keep it salty, guys, and don't forget to pick Flick. Thomas.
What's Pick Flick?
That's a reference from the movie Election. Tracy Flick is Reese Witherspoon's character.
Oh.
She is running for class president. She is an evil, doing evil machinations. But Matthew Broderick's character is also pretty evil.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with the movie.
I didn't enjoy it very much.
Okay.
But I did watch it. What is wrong with UCLA's running game?
Yes.
I will start with...
The running backs?
No. I will start with the scheme. Because I think this is where things need to start. I think the offensive scheme, especially early on, relied heavily on slow developing run plays that were quite easily blown up in the backfield at or near the line of scrimmage.
Okay.
I think they've been best when they run kind of straight ahead with dives and ISOs and, you know, stuff kind of straight up the middle. A lot of the pulling schemes that were a huge part of what Chip Kelly was doing and kind of getting athletic linemen out in front of the play and doing some kind of nifty work to set those up, that's not really happening. I think some of it is maybe a perceived lack of mobility in this line group, which gets to the second part. The offensive line hasn't been good this year. The guys who returned who were solid last year, new offensive line coach Juan Castillo, had them all gain weight. So in theory, more powerful, but in practice, a lot less mobile. And so they're having trouble hitting second level blocks and frankly, even getting past the first level. They had a major issue at right guard to start the year. It required playing Nicky Prongo, so walk-on at right guard over the UNLV transfer, Alani Makahele. Prongos then had to switch to left tackle because Ruben Onuje and Jalen Jeffers both got hurt, and Prongos was simply probably UCLA's best offensive lineman. They're now doing a new combination that's been slightly better in pass protection, but has arguably been worse in run blocking, because if you look at the two opponents they've played, they should have been able to run the ball on Minnesota and Rutgers. They weren't able to on either. So I would say opponent adjusted, I think the running game has actually gotten worse.
Oh.
But they are slightly better in pass protection, which this offense was always going to be more predisposed to the pass. So I think you take the trade-off. But Sam Yoon at center, he gives up a lot of weight. He doesn't have a ton of playing strength. And so if you have a center that's getting blown up a lot, you're not going to typically have a very good running game. So there's a lot of culprits. I would start with scheme, then go to off-season strength and conditioning, and then just general offensive line talent. But it's a many-fathered beast. I think UCLA's running backs are actually fine. I think if they were in a different offense, they'd be fine. But just the way it's constructed right now, it's not very good.
All right. Nick had a question. He says, gentlemen, question for you in all seriousness. Looking at USC's schedule, depending on what the team's psyche is, you could see 3, maybe 4 losses. Depending if this team just implodes or not, at what point is Lincoln Riley's job in question?
When you come up with $80 million, Nick.
Yeah, in that range.
Yeah.
Might be more. At what point does the fan base give up on this and him? We all know they have a very high standard for themselves, despite really never winning anything in the last 20 years. And at this point, are they going to be stuck with him because they can't pay the buyout like UCLA was stuck with Chip Kelly? Nick.
So here's my question for you.
Very different buyouts.
So obviously, if they lose 3 or 4 more games, the hot seat talk will start, because that's insane. They would be 5-7 or 4-8.
Yes.
However, Ryan, everyone knows USC's got some well-heeled boosters. Is there any group of them that could actually come up with something well north of $50 million for a coach buyout?
I don't.
Or would be willing to?
I don't. I couldn't imagine that.
And then the second question is, and I don't know how much this actually happens now that athletic departments are handing out these huge buyouts, but could USC's athletic department finance the buyout, essentially take out a loan against whatever collateral?
No way.
And like, then pay the buyout?
They're trying to figure out how to pay the $22 million that you got to pay the athletes.
But what if you're non-viable? Like, what if it is 4-8 and the recruiting class tanks?
I think it would be like they couldn't. My opinion is you couldn't even consider it until, I mean, maybe after next season it could be considered.
Well, and also this is like a doomer USC fan. The reality is they're not going to go 4-8. I think the absolute bottom is probably the 6-6 I predicted.
Yeah.
Like right now, they're favored against Rutgers by 2 touchdowns. At Washington, I'll say, let's just call that a loss. Call it a loss. Nebraska at home, they'll be favored by a touchdown, something
probably,
like that.
Yeah.
At UCLA, they'll be favored by at least a touchdown,
yeah,
maybe more. And then Notre Dame at home, let's call that a loss. But that's 2 more losses, 6-6, maybe 5-7, I guess, if they could, you know, if they find a way to lose to Nebraska or UCLA. But the bottom would have to really fall out for them to go 4-8. Like they would have to. They'd have to play a lot worse than they're playing right now.
Right.
They've lost a lot of close games. They'd have to be way, way worse to lose four of the remainder.
Yeah.
So that's not going to happen. But, you know, look ahead to next year. Are they going to be demonstrably better next year? Miller Moss, what year is he?
Junior.
Are they going to try to upgrade? Are they going to roll with him?
They could, yeah. I don't know.
Like, there's so many questions, I think. And recruiting has been, I would say, poor by USC standards under Lincoln Riley, just kind of aside from that first class.
Yeah, and then they've got like a top 10-ish going now, I think. So they're doing better.
It's decent, but it's not like what I think.
Right.
You know, when I went back and looked at like what I was saying, what you were saying at the time that he was hired, and it was, oh, they're going to be top five classes every single year. And that hasn't happened. NIL hasn't really happened at the level that people thought it might. There's a lot of things with this program that need to get figured out. And they're not all on Lincoln Riley, but at the end of the day, the buck stops there. And if they don't produce, like if they go, let's say they go 6-6 this year, let's say they finish out 6-6 next year, if they don't go, what, 8-4, 9-3 there'll be some pitchforks.
Yeah, no, I think people will be pissed.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's even a possibility until, unless something like crazy happens. But yeah, I don't think it's a possibility.
Yeah.
I think you're up.
I'm up. All right. We've got Dean with a Y, Bramos. Anyway, subject, okay. Oregon's upcoming Big Ten ether battles. Weather battles? I don't know what he was going for there. Hi, podcaster and simulcaster of champions. Oregon's acting tough now, but I don't see them keeping up that pass-happy offense through the end of the season. Big Ten weather after Week 7 is a wholly different beast. They'll be on the outside looking in while the Ohio State, Windiana, and mighty Illinois battle for the championship. Them was lucky to face Ohio State at home in the summer. The Ducks are in the Big Ten now, not playing in the Little Tykes League. Every team plays tough. Oregon is not ready for the cold-as-hell conditions in Madison come November. You newbies in your socialist little West Coast beach towns aren't built for this. Are we looking... This guy's never been to Laguna Beach. Don't call that place socialist. They're liable to burn your house down. Are we looking at an inevitable loss to Wisconsin? Ducks on Twitter are going off about their September record and planning Tahiti vacations, while real Big Ten fans are prepping for the coldest winter we have seen in decades due to your Californication of our border. Not allowing us to build the border wall and keep La Nina out was a mistake you'll be paying for with snow game losses in Big Ten country.
Wow.
I'm told the Ducks have a saying, it never rains at Austin. Well, I'm not sure what that means. I've been to Austin and it rains plenty. How do you see Oregon handling the dogfight this weekend against Illinois in Big Ten weather? Forecast is rain. You're not in Austin anymore. Another loss, no doubt. We will feast on Duck post game. I understand Duck's mascot is a Peking duck, so Peking duck seems the obvious choice. What are your top five duck recipes to enjoy after upsetting the Ducks?
Wow.
I'm pretty sure this is a Washington fan.
Maybe.
I think they're having some fun.
Yeah. This game is played in Eugene, though.
Correct.
Illinois is coming there.
Big Ten weather, though.
They do say it never rains there, which, you know, it's kind of bullshit, but whatever. You know, like, that's fine. I've had different kinds of duck. Not like around a Oregon game, but I do enjoy. Have you eaten duck?
I've eaten duck.
Do you ever have foie gras? That's pretty awesome.
No.
I think they banned that here, to be honest.
Yeah, probably.
In California. I had it in France, and it was freaking awesome.
I had some roasted duck.
Roasted duck's good. I've had some fatty. Like, I've only gone hunting once. It was, like, with the ex down in Tennessee, snow and all this stuff. But
so you like to kill animals?
If I want to eat them, yeah.
Yeah.
Like fishing. But this was the first time I did any kind of hunting. And
so maybe you're the Zodiac killer.
Cleaned the ducks.
Did you like to kill animals as a small child?
No, I'm not enjoying that. But if I want to eat them.
Did you stake out some cats in your backyard?
No, not those.
Okay.
But the duck was pretty fatty. Like, you get the.
So you like to kill animals to eat them?
Yes.
So sort of a Jeffrey Dahmer thing going on there?
Similar.
Okay.
But mostly fish. Animals,
I don't even know. Was
fish.
Dahmer one of the ones who ate people?
He was it. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. He ate people.
Yeah.
But no, mostly fish. I've only done one hunt thing, and that was the duck. But it didn't. It was okay. Like, whatever. But I love fish. I'm gonna have some salmon poke tonight.
Look at you.
That I caught. I'm going to make
some pokey salmon.
I love it. Okay. DC Dog. Hey, fellas. This is a question for the pod. He says, just opened Twitter and I'm seeing Ryan retweet his guy, Shotgun Spratling, on videos blaming the refs for USC loss to Maryland. Are the refs to blame for these losses? Strike these losses from Lincoln Riley's record. He doesn't have his guys in the program yet. David, do you concur?
Obviously.
DC Dog.
Obviously. I think you can easily make the case that Lincoln Riley – look, Lincoln Riley doesn't fail. He can only be failed by the refs, by his players, by the media. I think if – okay, so if you didn't have like a Luke Evans out of practice questioning the mindset of this team, questioning their ability to finish, would they be 6-1 right now? I don't know.
Probably.
You don't know.
You know, I should have took USC laying the points because we were closed. You know, the media was locked out of practice this week.
Right. And
meaning
the media is
we couldn't
blamed.
Watch stretching.
Correct.
So that's probably why they've lost 4 games because we watched the stretching.
Yeah. And now that you're not watching the stretching
they're
anymore,
gonna win them all.
It's going to be gangbusters.
Yeah.
So refs for sure. I mean, I think you could easily make the claim they wouldn't have a loss in the Lincoln Riley era if it hadn't been for the refs. Those dastardly refs.
But for the real question, he wasn't blaming the refs. He's just pointing out bad. There'd been a lot of bad calls, and a lot of them seemed to go against USC. That's not why they're losing. It's not good, but it's not. Yeah, that's not the blame of why it's going on there. But it's he didn't say this is what, you know, that's not what was going on there. But there have been some really bad. I'm sure you've seen them too. Like we expected to have better officiating in the Big Ten because we had such bad officiating in the Pac-12. It's been some pretty bad stuff. Different bad, but bad. Is that fair?
Different bad. But yes, I would say anybody like I think we both talked ourselves into it at different points that we'd be getting away from bad refereeing. But it's no. I think it's first. I think it's a very hard job.
Yes.
They're all bad everywhere. There isn't good refereeing.
They're not like full-time people even, you know?
No, it's never going to be good. It's never going to be adequate. It's never going to be like, oh, wow, this has been awesome. You'll get one-offs where you're like, that was a well-officiated game. But you're talking about a broad base of people, and it's a judgment call system, and you're going to disagree with some calls.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think we're getting as much like of what I would refer to as the avant-garde decisions from Pac-12 refs, where it
right.
would be like, oh, we pulled out this dusty old tome and it says here 37.1.6B that the head coach needs to be wearing a tie. You were not wearing a tie. That's a 15-yard penalty. We don't see as much of that. But I would say, like, just kind of garden variety, like, kind of missed calls where you're like, what the hell? A little bit more of that. Like, Pac-12, you were never really worried about them missing calls. It was, could you please stop throwing flags?
Yes. There's a lot of missed calls now. And to be fair, so Shotgun rewatches. He'll retweet, too. Like, if the USC defender, like, tackled Maryland's receiver, he was like, USC just tackled this guy and they wasn't called. Like he's just pointing out stuff he sees in the rewatch.
Well, and I would say like you said about pass interference earlier, I would say like I haven't seen as much offensive holding. Like holding at the Pac-12, you would see it
all
I don't know. Every other series for a team, they would have at least one holding call, it felt like. Not seeing that nearly as much. I think maybe they allow offensive lines to play a little bit more in this league.
I think they do. But I think they allow DBs to play, too. At least we've not seen a lot of that, unless it's like pretty blatant.
Jalen Davies has been called for, I want to say, 5 different pass interferences in the end zone.
Okay.
No, just in the end zone. That's not counting the other pass interferences he's been called for.
Crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's put up a couple comments, questions. Matthew, David, what do you think of Kirk Ferentz? Constantly waffle between underappreciated and dinosaur buffoon.
I think it's both. I think underappreciated for consistently churning out excellent defenses and pretty good special teams with recruiting levels that would not indicate they should be able to do that.
Yeah.
From like a coaching standpoint, defense is just what that program does, and they coach it really, really well. At the same time, a complete dinosaur from understanding the importance of offense, understanding how it has to be a key part of your – Kyle Whittingham from Pac-12, Utah, He had an evolution over his career. Like, and he said at Pac-12 Media Day last year, the last ever one that was the full team, he said, offense is more important than defense. And this is an old DC guy who's like very much, I think, historically of the Kirk Ferentz bent. Like,
yes.
Defense is all that matters. But he looked at the analytics and he understood, no, it's offense much more correlates with your potential success than defense. And it's not to say you can win by having a Lincoln Riley offense and then an Oklahoma defense from 2019 or whatever it was, but you can, you're going to trend better if you've got a better offense than if you've got a better defense, if you're losing one or the other. Ferentz, I think, has neglected that side of the ball and almost has a disdain for it in a way that I think reflects just a lack of kind of growing with the times. So I do think, you know, retirement shouldn't be that far off for him. And I think the influx of the you know, like an Oregon and a Washington that might continue to exert some pressure on Iowa, and also the dissolution of the Big Ten West, that might accelerate that departure too, because it's harder to see Iowa putting together those kind of sneaky 10-win seasons in the new look Big Ten, unless they get really favorable schedules. That are more or less similar to the Big Ten West. But even this year, they're not going 10-2.
Yeah.
You know, so I've got complicated feelings about Ferentz, but I do think he's kind of past his sell by date.
Dave pointing out, pretty sure it's Austin, David. You were kept saying Austin.
I think Dave is the one who wrote that email.
It's not Austin. It's Austin.
It's Austin. You said Austin several times in the email, Dave.
I think he just set you up or set who
he
up.
He set me up to be an idiot.
El Gordo.
But I don't care.
Big Ten refs couldn't operate a VCR for replays. The one, the very Pac-12 call was the one, the USC one, where it looked like a touchdown, but they didn't call it a touchdown for Minnesota, I think. But then on replay review, they reversed it and made it a touchdown, even though on the replay it definitely wasn't. You couldn't see that it was a touchdown.
So there's a few
that was very Pac-12-y.
There's a few things that I've liked that refs have done this year that have gone outside the rules to actually do the thing that's right. Because that play, they obviously should have signaled that he scored on the field.
Yes.
For whatever reason, they didn't. They should have opted for signaling that he scored. So on replay, no definitive evidence, but they realize, man, we really should have signaled that he scored. And so they said, well, it's a touchdown, because we should have said that anyway. And then if this had been the reverse of this thing, it wouldn't have, like, it wouldn't have even been a controversy. Like Lincoln Riley, if they signaled touchdown on the field, he wouldn't have even argued about the replay at all, because it was pretty obvious to everyone on the field, in the stands, except for like that one line judge or whatever, whoever was calling the touchdown. So they did the right thing. It's just for the wrong reasons. Like it's because they had, you know, they weren't following the rules, but they were following the spirit of the game. Right.
Yeah, Pac-12 would do the wrong thing for any kind of reason.
There was another one I liked, which was the Texas-Georgia game.
Yes.
So Texas does the wrong thing, which is they throw a bunch of trash on the field.
That gave the referees time
to think about what they had done and decide, you know what? We're just going to do a thing that we don't usually do and pick up a flag 7 minutes after we threw it. And because we got enough time to do that, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And Kirby Smart, you know, blows a gasket, the whole thing. I don't even think it was because the fans threw the trash on the field. I think it's because they could see it up on the Jumbotron and they saw, oh, man, we really screwed up that call.
But I think because they threw the trash, they had the time to see it on the Jumbo.
Yeah. And so then it's like,
you don't want to set a precedent that you're
It's not like soccer hooligans. It's like they're not going to get murdered walking out of the stadium. It's, oh, man, we screwed that up. Let's not screw that up. Let's instead just take it back. It's better to admit a mistake than to just double down on it. I like that stuff. I don't care if it's within the rules. Just do it. Make the calls right.
Yeah.
If it's not reviewable, then look up at the Jumbotron for 30 seconds and be like, yeah, it's reviewable. We're going to pick up that flag because that was stupid. That was a bad call.
We got a couple more. Johnny, would Clay Helton have won more games with Caleb Williams at quarterback than Lincoln Riley did?
Would who? Sorry, where is it?
Would Clay Helton have won more games with Caleb? Dave, you give your joke an answer, then you give your real answer.
uh, I don't think it would be that different what happened.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's my real answer, is that I don't think things would be that dissimilar, because Caleb Williams was a transcendent player. Like maybe a win or two different, but not much. Like I don't think Lincoln Riley maximized Caleb Williams to any extent. Like they should have been a shitload better last year.
Yeah.
Would Clay Helton have been as loyal to a horrible defensive coordinator as Lincoln Riley was to Alex Grinch?
Potentially, but
potentially.
Yeah.
Would he have hired a guy as horrible as Alex Grinch?
Oh, for sure. He's hired a lot of horrible. I mean, he probably couldn't get Alex Grinch. Like that's the problem.
But like that's the thing. And so I don't know. I mean, the real thing is that Caleb Williams wouldn't have showed up on campus if it was Clay Helton, because he was Lincoln Riley's boy. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think it would be that different.
He had some success with Sam Darnold, like where it showed there was just
let Sam but Darnold cook.
Unfortunately, in year two, Sam Darnold looked like Caleb Williams year two also. So that would like
that's why I'm saying it wouldn't be that
that
dissimilar.
Would back up your similarity.
Yeah, because it's kind of it was kind of the same deal. And let down a lot by a defense, too, that second year.
Okay, one more. We'll get out of here from Dustity. Is Tom Segura, the comic who talks about Garth Brooks' uncanny travel schedule coinciding with missing / murder cases? So there was some Garth Brooks talk in the chat earlier. But I thought this was interesting. Dustity showing a lot of interest in the multiple murder.
That's interesting, Dustity.
And also leaving the voicemail as our Rutgers fan. So I don't know. It seems to be putting
it's
some
just interesting things to think about.
Yes. I don't know what to say. I did pass along.
Maybe send us your address too, Destiny.
Yes. That would be good.
Yes.
But good stuff. Fun show. We went a little longer for a preview than I think we normally do. We had a bunch of questions. We had a lot of things going on. Yeah, so enjoy all of the games this weekend. It should be a barrel of laughs. No game for you, David. I got a Friday game, so we should be able to watch a lot of these.
Yeah, we're going to be locked in on Saturday.
It should be a lot of fun. All right, well, that's going to – do you want to pose for something?
Is there, well, how would you like me to pose?
I don't know. I was going to say, like, for a screenshot. Do you have any ideas?
No.
No ideas? You got nothing? You want to do one of these, like Princess? Okay. That'll wrap it up. For David Woods, I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.